Hello, my name is Lawrence Wilson, and welcome to a video study through the book of Hebrews. We are now entering Hebrews chapter 12, but before we do, it's very important for us to remember where we've just come from. In Hebrews chapter 11, we have seen example after example after example from the Old Testament of those who place full confidence and faith in God. And some saw blessings because of it. Some saw hardships come because of it. All of them, though, we saw at the end of Hebrews chapter 11, died in faith, not having been made complete, not having seen the completion of God's full promises coming into effect. So now we see the author making another strong appeal to his readers to follow after this example, to continue on in faith, not to turn back from following in Jesus. In Hebrews chapter 12, beginning in verse 1, we read, "Therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us also lay aside every weight and sin which clings so closely, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us. Looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is seated at the right hand of the throne of God." So he now pictures the Christian life as this grand race, right? He uses this metaphor of a race, and that all of these Old Testament saints who have died now, then he says this is like this crowd of witnesses that has gathered around to observe what we are doing. So because we have this great cloud of witnesses, because we have all these who have gone before us, now looking at us, now observing what we are doing, he says, let's put aside anything that might hinder us, any weight, anything that might hold us back, and any sin which will trip us up, and let's continue to run with endurance. Meaning that he knows there's going to be hardships, but let's endure it, the race that is set before us, not having our eyes focused on the crowd that's surrounding us, not having our eyes focused on the past, that's these people of the Old Testament that he's mentioned. Again, he did not bring them up so that we would idolize them or put them on a pedestal, but to show examples of how continued faith in Jesus Christ is the ultimate goal. So he says what we should be looking to is Jesus, who's the founder. He's the one that started all this, and he's the perfecter. He's the one who made it possible for us to be made perfect, the founder and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him. That's an interesting term, because what was set before Jesus Christ was death on a cross, and yet Jesus saw past the suffering that he had to endure to the ultimate joy, that is the ability to bring more people into God's kingdom, the ability to allow people to experience salvation. For that joy, he endured the cross, despising the shame, and is seated at the right hand of the throne of God. So even Jesus Christ sets an example of persevering through difficult things, of enduring hardships. That is what the author wants these believers to do, acknowledging full well that living the Christian life, yeah, it's hard, but you have to endure. You have to persevere. Verse 3, he says, "Consider him who endured from sinners such hostility against himself." That'd be Jesus. Thinking about Jesus who endured these hostilities against himself. "So that you may not grow weary or faint-hearted." When we see like how Jesus lived, how Jesus was able to endure, maybe that can give us some strength, he says. "In your struggle against sin, you have not yet resisted to the point of shedding your blood." Now that's incredible to think that that's what he's saying to them. As I've made mention many times throughout these videos, these believers were probably suffering worse persecution than any of us in America have ever dealt with. And yet he says, even they, you have not resisted to the point of shedding blood yet. So don't even think that what you're doing is comparable to what Christ had to go through. And he says, "You have forgotten the exhortation that addresses you as sons." And then here we have a quote from the book of Proverbs. My son, do not regard lightly the discipline of the Lord, nor be weary when reproved by him. For the Lord disciplines the one he loves and chastises every son whom he receives. Why is he bringing this up? Because he wants them to understand that perhaps part of the difficulties that you're going through is not actually, is actually a part of God's plan for you. It's a form of discipline or punishment that God is enacting on you because he is your father, which is further evidence that you actually are a true believer, that God, you know, any father is going to discipline his own children. You don't discipline somebody else's children. You say, look, you look at somebody else's child that's wild and crazy and you go, well, he's got no discipline. You know, he's got no manners. He's got no self-respect. But when it's your own child, you say, no, that's not going to happen. We're going to get that out of you. We're going to take measures to bring you to where you need to be. So he says in verse 7, it is for discipline that you have to endure. God is treating you as sons. For what son is there whom his father does not discipline? If you are left without discipline, in which all have participated, then you are illegitimate children and not sons. Besides this, we have had earthly fathers who disciplined us, and we respected them. Shall we not much more be subject to the Father of spirits and live? For they disciplined us for a short time, as it seemed best to them. But he disciplines us for our good, that we may share his holiness. So he says a part of what you're dealing with right now in the struggles of your life is just the discipline of God that's coming on your life, that God is trying to remove those last vestiges of sin from your life. And God is trying to better you because you're his child, because he cares about you. So he says sometimes you just have to endure the discipline, knowing that you don't like it in the moment, but ultimately it's working out something better for you in the future. And we all could acknowledge that perhaps even with our own parents growing up, that there were things they did that we did not always enjoy or understand at the time that they were doing it. But now maybe when looking back on it, we can see some of those things and say, I see what they were doing, and I see how it has benefited my life. And we understand it's not necessary sometimes to just endure those things, right? This is why he says in verse 11, for at the moment, all discipline seems painful rather than pleasant. But later, it yields the peaceable fruit of righteousness to those who have been trained by it. So endure the hardships that are coming. Part of it may be is the discipline of God, and so we take that as a good sign that we actually are one of God's children because he's disciplining us. Then our author goes into a few more encouragements. Therefore, he says, lift your drooping hands and strengthen your weak knees and make straight paths for your feet so that what is lame may not be put out of joint, but rather be healed. Strive for peace with everyone and for the holiness without which no one will see the Lord, right? Keeping in mind that sinners do not get to enter the presence of God. So he says, you need to strive for holiness because no one will see the Lord without that. But keeping in mind that holiness is not something we attain on our own merit. It's something that comes through our faith in Jesus Christ, which is why he continues by saying, see to it that no one fails to obtain the grace of God, right? Again, no falling away from grace, as he's warned them multiple times. Continue to trust in the faith that the grace of God and the faith that you have that is going to save you. That no root of bitterness, he says, springs up and causes trouble, and by it many become defiled. See that no one is sexually immoral or unholy like Esau, who sold his birthright for a single meal, despised what God was trying to do in his life because he was hungry. For you know that afterward, when he desired to inherit the blessing, he was rejected, for he found no chance to repent, though he sought it with tears. And you can read about that example of Esau way back in Genesis chapter 25. So we see here again towards the end of this particular passage we're studying that a few more stern warnings about, look, being careful about this whole pulling away from Jesus thing, fading back from Jesus thing. Because without the holiness that he provides, no one will see the Lord. He is the only way into God. So there is no, well, this is hard. Let me, you know, back up for just a moment. The author once again encouraging his readers and encouraging us, the only way to God is through Jesus, and that inevitably includes that the only way to grow in your relationship with God is through the hard times and through the sufferings that come because of our faith, because of our relationship to Jesus. So let us take the encouragement of this author and put aside anything that's holding us back. Put aside any sin that might trip us up. Let us fix our eyes firmly on Jesus Christ and let us run with endurance this path that God has set before us, knowing that endurance means this is not always going to be easy, but it is the best path. We have already seen how Jesus Christ is better than the angels, than the prophets, than Moses, than even Joshua, than the priests of the Old Testament, than the sacrifices that they offered. He brings in a better covenant than the old covenant, right? Why would we want to turn anywhere else? It is only through him that we will find true joy and satisfaction. So let us follow the example of Christ. Endure the difficult things. Look forward to the joy that we have in being with Christ one day. I hope and pray that something said has ministered to your heart, and I hope that you share it with those around you. Thank you, and God bless.